Shalom, and thank you for listening to Progressively Jewish, the podcast where you can explore and connect to Judaism through a progressive Jewish lens. I'm Rabbi Monique Mayer, and it's my pleasure to be hosting an episode about reconciliation linked to this week's portion of the week, Vayechi, which covers Genesis chapters 47 to 50. I am delighted to be joined by Dr. Chani Smith, a musician and lecturer on the rabbinic program at Leobet College, and a founding member and former honorary secretary of Friends of the Bereaved Families Forum. She's going to speak to us about the work of that organization around reconciliation. Thanks for joining us today, Chani.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak about the Bereaved Families Forum.
I thought we might begin with you sharing a bit about the background of the Bereaved Families Forum for the benefit of our listeners who may not be familiar with the organization and its work.
It's a unique organization, and I would just perhaps start with one of the unique things about it. That is that it's the only organization in the world where bereaved families of both sides of an ongoing conflict are working during the conflict to try and reach reconciliation and build bridges. There are organizations where reconciliation happens after the fighting is finished. But we're dealing with a conflict which has gone on for decades, and there is a sense of urgency, and they are very brave in facing their pain, their own pain and the pain of the other side, to try and do something. So a little bit of background. The Bereaved Families Forum started as what is called Parent Circle, established by a father who lost his son. Yitzhak Frankelton lost his son, Arik, in 1995. His son was a soldier who was kidnapped by Hamas and killed. He was 19 years of age. And Yitzhak Frankenthal, an Orthodox Jew, decided to choose an unusual path for a bereaved father. And in the name of his pain and his son, to work for dialogue and peace. At the time, there were bereaved parents demonstrating outside Yitzhak Rabin's home against the peace process. And Yitzhak Frankenthal stood, was a lone demonstrator, saying, "Not in my name. I want to support the peace process." And
that must have been quite amazing, though, because for someone to have such a traumatic event happen, to lose his son, and to look for another way forward.
Yes, and this is what marks all the people who are members of the Bereaved Families Forum. Yes, absolutely. And Rabin went and spoke to him and said, "Find other people like you." And he contacted other bereaved parents, first from Israel, and then from Gaza. Originally, it was people from Gaza. At the time, there was more traffic between Israel and Gaza. It was before the Second Intifada. And they created the Chug HaHorim, the parents' circle. And they started meeting. And later on, they opened it up to not just parents who lost their children, but to anyone who lost an immediate member of their family and who wants to take that path, to join them. So it became Parent Circle Families Forum, and now it's also mostly known as Forum HaMishpachot HaShakulot, the Bereaved Families Forum. Although sometimes people still refer to him as shorthand as the Parent Circle, but it's important to stress it's families that are members. The Bereaved Families Forum has more than 650 bereaved families So of course, individuals, there are more than that who have joined. And they are more or less half and half Israeli and Palestinian families, but actually more Palestinian than Israelis. That always comes as a surprise to Jewish audiences who are so indoctrinated to think that there is no one to talk on the other side, that they don't believe the Palestinians would want to join it. I have to say that the Palestinians are also indoctrinated to think that there's no one on the Israeli side to talk to, that no one wants peace. And that's, I think, part of the tragedy of the conflict, that both sides, the majority of people want peace. What are the details of the peace, they may argue, but there is a desire, particularly ordinary people want to get on with their lives and want to stop the killing and the bloodshed. I was one of the founding members of the British Friends of the Bereaved Families Forum. We were established in 2004, and we wanted to support that work of reconciliation and understanding, both financially, but also to say to those people who are behind you, we wanted to bring the message of reconciliation also to the United Kingdom. At the time, it's still going on, but we were very aware of the problems on campuses between Jewish and Muslim students, and you know, pro-Israeli and pro-Palestinian. And it was quite clear that only good can come from bringing those two sides together and working together.
I remember in 2014, when everything kicked off in Gaza, and the Bereaved Families Forum erected a big tent in the middle of Tel Aviv, and they had a banner across the top, and I'm trying to remember what it said.
It will not stop until we talk. I've got a sticker like that. You know, people used to put them on their cars, those stickers. That was one of the initiatives that was in the midst of the Gaza campaign of 2014. Yeah, for 70 days, they sat outside on a pavement and invited people to come and join them and have dialogue.
What actually drew you to the work?
So I'm Israeli. I was born after the State of Israel was established, but still within less than a decade from the Holocaust and from Israel's independence. And I was born in the shadow of the Holocaust and of many bereavements to do with the war, particularly with members of a family that, you know, were lost in both the Holocaust and in the battles to gain independence. I grew up with a lot of sadness, and while in those early days of the state, for my generation there was ecstasy about having a state and building a life and a lot of optimism, there was the conflict was there, the fear of the other, of the Arabs, you know, was very, very strong. And then I was a teenager when the Six-Day War happened, and again a good friend, my closest friend, lost a brother, and I could see bereavement close up, what it did to her parents, to her, to, you know, the pain of it all. So, you know, that is one element of growing up with, you know, ongoing, seeing the ongoing consequences of fighting. And I really wanted to do something. With living in England, it was very difficult to have any effect. And the politics of the, you know, the Israeli government of the last, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years, was not something that I found I could easily support. And yet I wanted to support the people, and I wanted to support the peace process. And then in 2003, a very close friend of mine was killed during one of the terror attacks, or, you know, just riding a bus. The last time I met her, she said to me, "Honey, don't go on buses in Israel. It's too dangerous." And yet she was caught, you know, sitting next to a suicide bomber. And she was a very special woman, Anna Orgel, Zichrona Livracha, who represented Israel in Museum Without Frontiers. She was a museum worker. And just her death shook me to the core. And I felt that I had to do something to honor her life and her memory. It was just, I just couldn't be consoled. But I didn't know what to do. And then soon after that, Danny, to my husband, was at Limud, and he heard Yitzhak Frankenthal, the founder of the Brief Families Forum, give a talk. And he came home and he told me about it. And I thought, this is something I could support wholeheartedly. And soon after that, my friend Judy Elkan decided to form a Friends of the Brief Families Forum in England. So I said, I'm in.
Right.
And I was, you know, working very closely with her, and I was, you know, honorary secretary, and organized many visits to the UK of members of the Brief Families Forum. So what we always did, we would bring a Palestinian and an Israeli who are members of the forum, who each lost an immediate member of the family. And we did a lot of tours to give talks to anyone we thought needed to hear the message or could support the message. So there were a lot of meetings over the years in the House of Commons and the House of Lords, really quite a number of meetings, spoken to the Foreign Office, that's on the diplomatic side, lots and lots of media interviews, newspapers, radio, television, lots of campus visits. Really, there was a great emphasis, thinking that we need to reach the young generation. And very often, it was the only kind of organization that both the Israeli society or Jewish society and the Muslim or Palestinian society felt that they could participate in. And often with more discussion afterwards, often we said to students, after this meeting, please find someone from the other side, you know, someone who comes from the other camp, go and have coffee and carry on, you know, together and carry on the conversation. Tell each other about who you are, what your personal story is, what you know, what, not just about you, about your parents. Where did your parents come from? Where did your grandparents come from? Already you can see that you know, the two sides have got so much in common. Is, first of all, I could see hope coming from meeting together, work for the future, something positive, something about seeing the humanity of the other side. So, and building bridges, you're doing something. You know, I've got a little quote from a Palestinian member of the Brief Families Forum. More than 90% on both sides believe in peace. To build a bridge, you don't need millions of people. You need enough people to build a bridge so that a million others can cross over it.
It's really powerful. And it all ties in with this idea and this challenging notion of reconciliation.
Yes.
I think the word reconciliation gets said a lot. And I think there's not always an awareness of just how much work is involved to get to a place where reconciliation can happen.
I was thinking of the reconciliation that we read about, you know, both in Parashat Vayigash and Parashat Vayechi, which is this week's portion. Although the big dramatic moment of the reconciliation starts in Vayigash, the end of the reconciliation process is in Vayechi. And Vayechi, it starts with Jacob telling his narrative, what happened to him and how he lost Rachel and so on. And I think that telling of the narrative is a key tool in the work of reconciliation. You know, I was mentioning about, you know, go and have coffee together and tell each other about yourselves, you know, as a starting point. Actually, I want to tell you, I know you are a rabbi of Bristol, and one of the loveliest meetings that we had was the Jewish society invited a Muslim society for a Friday night dinner with two young members of the forum in their 20s who came to talk to them. And out of that conversation, they decided to have a joint radio campus station. Oh. And they started broadcasting together. So, you know, and that's just from the meeting, from the dialogue. Now, back to Vayechi. So Jacob tells the narrative, and then he gives a blessing to each of his sons. It's a bit of a weird blessing, because he actually reminds them what they've done, including not so nice things that they've done. So it sometimes feels, you know, a bit weird to call it a blessing, but he tells the truth. Mm-hmm. And I think that telling the truth is absolutely key to reconciliation work. We have to be able to be allowed to tell the truth of the injustice and the pain that we have that was caused to us, and to hear the other side say that. Tell things as they are. The situation, for example, in the Palestinian Authority, the daily life of people there is very, very hard. Both sides suffer, and I don't want to compare suffering, but do we want to see the suffering on the other side? So, you know, we have in a way to be true witnesses to the truth. And in a way, Jacob is a true witness to his sons. He reflects to them what they've done. And perhaps there is a blessing eventually in that too. Jacob sends his brothers to go back to the land of Canaan. They are scared that now that their father is no longer there, that he will then take revenge. And he said, I'm not God. I'm not going, you know, to do that kind of final judgment. I can't judge you. You know, don't be afraid. Go in peace. And only after, and they apologize. And the power of apology is immeasurable. When we were talking before, you asked me if I can tell tales of transformations that this work brings. The theme that comes again and again is how important it was for people to hear an apology coming from the other side. Particularly the Palestinians said, you know, when Yitzhak Frankenthal came to a home of a bereaved Palestinian person and apologized for the pain that they have suffered because maybe an Israeli soldier killed their child. Well, this is someone whose son Arik was kidnapped and killed by Hamas, and yet he did find, you know, in himself to also see that there is a responsibility to be taken on both sides for the pain caused and apologize. And that equalizes and that gives respect to the other side. And that's what Joseph's brother are doing. They apologize to him and he forgives. And only then reconciliation can happen. I don't want to make things simple and to maybe confuse forgiveness and reconciliations. They're not the same. And you can reconcile perhaps first, and maybe forgiveness will eventually follow, perhaps when peace comes. I don't know. But we have to take steps towards it.
In Bristol, we showed a film produced by the Bereaved Families Forum called The Two-Sided Story that showed the audience some of the powerful and painful steps being taken toward reconciliation.
This film, Two-Sided Story, follows a group of Israelis and Palestinians who chose to join what are called the Narrative Project, which is to go to a series of four or five long meetings where they meet in small groups, one-to-one, with historians from both sides to really learn about each other. Part of that project is also going and visiting a site of a Palestinian village that was destroyed in, you know, in 1948, and also visiting Yad Vashem to understand where Israelis are coming from. And I always stress it's not in order to compare suffering. Everybody suffers and everybody's pain is great. But the tears, as Robbie Damelin, who is the spokesperson for the Israeli of Israeli side, you know, there's two spokespersons and two managers, you know, the two officers, they work, you know, very equally. But Robbie Damelin says that our tears on both sides have the same color. And when you realize that, you know, something happens, it just is transformative. The Narrative Project, the film, took a diverse group of people from both societies. But actually, most of those projects take people who have got already some interest in.
I think some of the most powerful moments for me as the viewer were seeing the friends and families of the Palestinians and the Israelis being very suspicious initially and angry and wondering why their friend, their relative, would even be involved in this work, this organization. But continuing to talk, even with people who are really feeling closed and angry, it goes back to what you were saying about the conversation and the face-to-face and hearing the other story and narrative. Those who went through the program, what came next for them?
A lot of the people who attended those narrative projects have taken on to start projects which will help.
Hani, there's so much work to be done. How does Bereaved Families Forum manage to have an impact?
Okay, so the scope of the work is quite big for a small group of people, and members of the forum are all bereaved. You know, it's somehow, when you hear this message coming from an Israeli and a Palestinian together, it's very powerful. Me telling you about it is already kind of, you know, it's already diluted in terms of, you know, I have not experienced the same pain, and therefore my journey has not been so transformative. But they meet with hundreds of classrooms. Again, always Israeli and a Palestinian together. It's often the first time that Palestinian youth can hear an Israeli who is not a soldier or a settler talking about their pain. And Israelis, for them, it's the first time that they see a Palestinian who talks about peace and, you know, and brings a new message. So there are already scores of thousands of graduates of those meetings who have heard the other side, and the feedback after those meetings is so positive. I can tell you that I think that our small organization, modest organization in the UK, has helped very much to change the language, how we talk about the conflict. You know, we very much, this was our slogan, pro-Palestinian question mark, pro-Israeli question mark, just pro-peace. You know, that message of not taking sides, of actually saying the name Palestine without, you know, as a Jew in synagogue, and the ceiling doesn't come down, you know, daring to invite speakers, you know, to mosques and to synagogues. It does, you know, once you meet a person on the other side, that wall of fear melts away, and you humanize the conflict, as I say. I'm using now words that the forum uses because they're so good, like building a framework for reconciliation. You know, the forum says the politicians will have to sign on the peace process. But what we can do is build a framework of reconciliation, because if that's not in place when the peace process is being signed, it will not be accepted by the societies.
It needs to be accepted by both sides.
And what's been the effect of the pandemic on the work of the organization?
Yes, so the negative side is that of the pandemic in terms of the work of the forum is that you cannot have meetings in schools, and you cannot have the narrative projects have to, everything has to be adapted to Zoom, which is what they're doing. But I will tell you that one of the amazing things that started very small is on the Remembrance Day, which is a day before the Independence Day in Israel, a sacred day of remembering all the soldiers and civilians that died in the conflict. I can't remember exactly how long ago, but more than 10 years ago, someone came up with the idea of having a joint memorial service for Israelis and Palestinians, to, you know, and have it as a day of thinking about the future and about bringing together. It started very small, and the year before last, it grew to 8,000 people, Israelis and Palestinians, taking part in it. I was at one of those events, and, you know, if you do Israeli-Palestinian joint memorial service, you'll find online, you know, so in with English translation. This year, they couldn't hold it, so they decided to do it on Zoom, and in America and in England and all over the world, and 200,000 people tuned in to take part in this memorial service. So, you know, they are trying as much as possible to use the technology to bring the message. And there will be in February one especially for England, where two young people in their 20s, both of them have lost sisters in the conflict, will be giving a special talk. There will be details on our website in, you know, near the time.
Thank you, Hani, for your inspirational words, and especially with so much conflict that there is hope, that there is, yes, a way forward, and this is, and just starting from seeing the other as another human being, moving from seeing them as an object to someone who is also here wanting peace and wanting connection, yes, and reconciliation.
Thank you very much for inviting me and reminding people that there are partners for peace on both sides.
Thank you, Dr. Hani Smith, for sharing your thoughts with us today. And thanks to Liberal Judaism, Reform Judaism, and Leo Bett College for supporting Progressively Jewish. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to Progressively Jewish so that you can receive all our episodes. We'd love you to help shape the future of Progressively Jewish. Would you like to be involved in an episode? What can we do or discuss that you'd value hearing? You can tell us on the new Progressively Jewish Facebook page or by emailing us at progressivelyjewish@gmail.com. Please recommend us to your friends and fellow congregants, those who are Jewish and people of all faiths and none. Also, do please leave a comment and review with your podcast provider. Next week's episode will be hosted by my friend and colleague, David Yehuda Stern, rabbinical student at Leo Bett College, who will be exploring omnipresence, the idea that God is present everywhere.